Okay, we've had a small break in recording. And now let me return to introducing our first speaker, Cole Fiori. She is a researcher in mathematical physics working on the algebraic structure of elementary particle physics. She currently is a Freigeist Fellow at the Humboldt University in Berlin, obtained her PhD from Waterloo University, and has held postdocs or research fellowships both at DAMT in Cambridge, the Department of Applied Math and Theoretical Physics, and at Ames in Cape Town. Her main interests are algebraic, division algebras, Jordan algebras, Clifford algebras, and their relation to particle physics. So this takes us beyond the realm of the real and complex numbers into those of quaternions and octonions. And she is invoking these algebraic structures to understand what the Standard Model is really about. And this will also be the topic of today's talk. Welcome, Cole.
You might be still muted. Oh dear. Ah.
Yes, can you hear me now? Perfect. Okay,
Yes,
so
we can.
thank you so much, Renata, for that really kind introduction. I'm going to see if I can get the screen share happening here. So let's put this up here. Okay, so no, that didn't work. Okay, so does everybody see what they're supposed to be seeing now?
That looks good.
Okay, so you can see and you can hear as you should. Is that
Correct. Everything's good.
okay? Perfect. Okay, so first of all, thank you so much to the organizers for putting this meeting together for us. I really hope that this conference prompts a lot of new collaborations, and thank you especially to everybody for showing up. So my name is Nicole, and today I want to tell you about some new results that I found together with my collaborator, Dr. Mia Hughes. So my talk today is entitled Division Algebraic Symmetry Breaking. And as the title suggests, Mia and I have been looking at particle models, which are cast into the language of norm division algebras. So in particular today, I'd like to show you how you can use the division algebras to break symmetries. And furthermore, I'd like to emphasize that these symmetry breaking methods don't appear naturally when you write these particle models down in the usual formalism. Okay. So throughout the seminar, we're going to be talking about a set of four number systems known as the norm division algebras over the reals. So these are given by the real numbers R, the complex number C, the quaternions H, and the octonions O. Now, one of the things that I find appealing about these algebras is that they give an example of a set of mathematical objects which are simultaneously special and yet not special. And what do I mean by this? Well, I mean special in the mathematical sense and not special in the physical sense. That is, R, C, H, and O are mathematically special because they're known to be the only finite dimensional norm division algebras over the real numbers. So they're a special set. There's only four of these. However, they're not special in the physical sense since we see them everywhere in nature. So for example, you'd be hard-pressed to find a theory in physics that doesn't depend on the real numbers in some way. We're so used to seeing the real numbers all the time that we don't even realize that we're making a choice in number systems anymore. And likewise, the vast majority of quantum theories are built using the complex numbers. And whether physicists realize it or not, it's the quaternions, or more precisely, the complex quaternions that underlie special relativity, electromagnetism, and isospin. And furthermore, the octonions have been known to be useful for teasing out properties of the strong nuclear force now for decades. So these norm division algebras provide one rare example of a set of number systems which is simultaneously unique and yet still woven into the fabric of everything we see around us. Okay, so let's introduce these norm division algebras. So as you already know, you can think of the complex numbers as being a two-dimensional extension of the real numbers. So here we have one dimension which runs along this new direction, along this new imaginary unit I. So the complex imaginary unit is what we're going to call I here. And of course, by imaginary unit, what I mean is that when you square it, it gives you minus one. Now, similarly, you can think of the quaternions as also being an extension of the real numbers, where this time we're extending by three imaginary units. So we're going to call these three imaginary units epsilon one, epsilon two, and epsilon three. And then finally, you can build the octonions also as an extension of the real numbers, where this time we've got seven imaginary units, which this time we're going to call E1 to E7. So part of the reason that I'm going through this right now is to set up notation. So every time that you see the complex, or every time you see the symbol I, you're going to have to know that this is the complex imaginary unit. And every time that you see the epsilon 1, epsilon 2, epsilon 3, you'll have to remember that those are the quaternionic imaginary units. And then every time that you see E1 to E7, you'll have to remember those are the octonions. Okay. So now that you've very briefly been introduced to the norm division algebras, we'd now like to put them all together somehow and start talking about particle physics. How are we going to do this? Well, we can start by specifying the states that we have in one generation. So in one generation of fermions, we've got a neutrino, we've got a charged lepton like the electron, we've got red, green, and blue up quarks, and we've got red, green, and blue down type quarks. So altogether, that's 8 complex degrees of freedom. Now each of these is going to have a spin up and a spin down pair, so we're going to multiply by 2. And then we're going to take each of these to have a chirality left and right. So in other words, we're going to include a right-handed neutrino. So we're going to multiply by 2 again. So altogether, this gives 8 times 2 times 2, which is 32 complex degrees of freedom, or in other words, 64 real degrees of freedom in one generation. Okay, so you might wonder, well, could there be a mathematical object out there which can capture all the states in one generation into a single package? Well, what would happen if we were to put all of our norm division algebras together in using a tensor product over R? Well, we get an algebra which is 1 times 2 times 4 times 8, or in other words, 64 real dimensions. So by tensoring together, we readily have an algebra which is the perfect size for one generation of standard model fermions together with a right-handed neutrino. Okay, so just some quick notational points. So this RCHO algebra is also known as the Dixon algebra. And furthermore, you may have noticed that RCHO is trivially equal to C cross H cross O. So we just put the R in for style. And then finally, I'm going to mention that I'm going to start writing this in shorthand. So instead of writing C cross H cross O every time, I'm just going to write CHO. So every time that you see CHO, really what I mean is R cross C cross H cross O. Okay. All right. So what happens now when we left and right multiply RCHO onto itself? Well, we're going to get left and right multiplication algebras. That is, we get chains of RCHO elements multiplying onto RCHO. So it's kind of like a space of operators acting on a state. Now these left and right multiplication algebras can be brought into the form of a Clifford algebra. And in this case, we're going to get the complex Clifford algebra CL10. So when you repeatedly multiply RCHO onto itself, you get CL10 structure. And this is great news because as soon as we have CL10 structure, it means that we have immediate access to all kinds of particle models. So CL10 sets us up perfectly to describe the SO10, or rather the spin-10 model. And as a consequence, we then have access to the Patti-Salon model, the left-right symmetric model, and most importantly, the standard model. Okay. So just to recap, so here, point number one is that here we've got an algebra which is 64 real dimensions, so it's the perfect size to be able to describe one generation, including a right-handed neutrino. And the next point is that when you left and right multiply RCHO onto itself, we then have immediate access to spin 10 and its subgroups. So it means that we have access to all kinds of particle models. But hang on, you might say, you know, CL10 models, those are already really well known. Are you really going to get anything new here that isn't already given to us within the usual CL10 formalism? Yes, we are. And the reason is because what we've got here is more than just the basic CL10 structure. Instead, we've got CL10 with all kinds of extra octonionic and quaternionic substructure. So let me give you an example of what I mean here. So here's the usual way, or the old way, of writing down SO10 generators. That is, you take the Clifford algebra and then you write down it's 45 bivectors of that Clifford algebra. So this is the old way, or the usual way, of writing down SO10 generators from the Clifford algebra. Now my collaborator Mia and I, we've got this new way of writing down SO10 generators in terms of RCHO. And this has got a richer structure. So here's what our new version of these spin 10 generators look like. So all of these R's here, these are real coefficients. The epsilons here, these of course, as you remember, those are quaternions. The E's here, those are octonions. This PL here is just a projector and it preserves left-handed states. And the PR similarly preserves right-handed states. Okay, so you might be wondering, well, you know, what can you get from this extra quaternionic and octonionic substructure? What's it good for? Well, maybe we can use it to break SO10. So how exactly are we going to do that? Well, incidentally, there are several options available to us, but the tool that we're going to use here is a tool called complex structures. So what is a complex structure? A complex structure is something that generalizes the notion of multiplying by the complex imaginary unit I. Or in other words, a complex structure is a linear map J on a real vector space for which J squared is equal to minus one. Okay, so we just introduced all of these normed division algebras. Here the complex numbers had the imaginary unit I, the quaternions had imaginary units epsilon 1, 2, and 3, and the octonions had imaginary units E1 to E7. So multiplication by any of these will give you a complex structure. So the idea then is that we can use these complex structures in order to break our symmetries down in a cascade. Now there are five possibilities that we're going to consider. There's left multiplication by an octonion. There's right multiplication by an octonion. There's left multiplication by a quaternion, there's right multiplication by a quaternion, and then finally there's left or right multiplication by a complex number, which is of course the same because the complex numbers live in the center of RCHO. So those are the five possibilities we're going to consider. Okay, so now let's start applying these complex structures. So here is our new set of spin 10 generators written in this new RCHO language. And the nice thing about this part of the talk is that you can see for yourself explicitly how this is going to work. Okay. So we're going to start off now by considering a complex structure which is given by left multiplication of the octonionic imaginary unit E7 onto psi, where psi is an element of RCHO and it represents one generation of standard model fermions. So now what we're going to do is we're going to require that our symmetries commute or are compatible with this complex structure. And you can see that requiring that they're compatible with the complex structure is going to break spin 10 down to a smaller subalgebra. Now this E7, it anti-commutes with any of the EIs or EJs that are in these generators. So if we look at the first term here, you can see that there's an EI and an EJ. So E7 is going to pass through both of those. You're going to get two minus signs. Those are going to cancel. So this term is going to survive. And then the next two terms, you can see that there's no EIs or EJs. So E7 is going to commute with that. So these two are also going to survive. And then on the bottom row, however, you can see that there's only one factor of EI. So E7 is not going to commute with anything on the back on the bottom row. So everything in the bottom row dies. And here's what we're left with. So the first term here gives us SO6, or in other words, SU4. And the next two terms are each going to give us SU2, or in other words, when you put them together, it gives you SO4. So what we really have here is SO6 plus SO4. Does anybody recognize what model that relates to? Any guesses? This is the famous Patisserie model. Okay, great. So let's move the Patisserie model up and we're going to repeat the process. So this time we're going to consider right multiplication by the imaginary octonionic unit E7. And this is going to cut our symmetries down again. So now when we require that these symmetries respect this new complex structure, here's what we get. So we find that both of the SU2s are going to survive just fine. However, this SO6 is going to get knocked down to a U3. Now, incidentally, this is also a well-known model. Does anyone recognize what this one is? This is the left-right symmetric model. Okay, so let's move the left-right symmetric model up and we're going to repeat the process again. Okay, so from here, which complex structure should we consider? So we just had two octonions, why not consider now a quaternion? So the first thing to say is that you can notice from the generators that we have here, they're all using exclusively left multiplication. So you can see that automatically they're going to commute with a complex structure that is quaternionic, which is coming in from the right. So the right multiplication complex structure from the quaternions is not going to cut the symmetries down at all. So we can move past that step. And now the next one that we have left is the left multiplication by quaternionic imaginary unit. And you'll notice here that there's a little subscript R on psi. So that's just specifying the fact that the space, the vector space that the complex structure is acting upon is given by the right-handed particles. And this is how chirality is introduced into this process. Okay, so now when we require that these symmetries are compatible with this complex structure, here's what we get. So does anybody recognize this set of symmetries? This is the standard model. These generate the standard model gauge group together with a B minus L. Okay, so let's move this up one last time. Okay, so we've just reached a standard model together with a B minus L, and we've now made use of the octonions and the quaternions. So what's the last type of imaginary unit that we have left over? How about the complex I? Now you should know that the complex I is a little bit of a special case because the complex numbers, of course, live in the center of our CHO. So it's unlike in the octonionic and the quaternionic cases. So this is my favorite part. So does anyone want to take a guess at what the final symmetry, gauge symmetry is going to be? So when we require that, if you take the generators for the symmetry U3 plus SU2 plus U1, and you require that they're invariant this time under the complex conjugate, so just simply taking I to minus I, then we find that we get the standard model's unbroken gauge symmetries together with a B minus L. Now, the reason why I find this exciting is that we know experimentally that the standard model breaks down to SU3 cross U1, but we don't know from a theoretical perspective why the Higgs should break down to this SU3 cross U1 and not some other symmetry. So the hope is that invariance under complex conjugation might at least be part of the answer. So just for one final comment, I should mention here that there's actually a richer story going on behind the scenes here. And you know, there's a richer story than just these complex structures connecting these models. So this is something that I plan to elaborate on in a future upcoming paper. In particular, you can see in more detail what's going on here with this B minus L symmetry, which seems to be lingering, and also what's going on with this subscript R, which we find when we are stepping down from the standard model plus B minus L to from the left-right symmetric model to the standard model. Okay, so let's zoom out now and summarize what just happened here. So to the best of our knowledge, I believe this is the first time that it's been shown that you can connect a list of particle symmetries like this in a cascade of complex structures. So first of all, we started with a new version of the SO10 model or the spin-10 model written in terms of R, C, H, and O. And we found that the subalgebra of the spin-10, which is compatible with a left octonionic complex structure, is given by the Patti-Salam symmetries. So we drop down from spin-10 to the Patti-Salam model. And the next we found a smaller subalgebra still, which also commutes with now with a right octonionic complex structure. And this breaks the Patti-Salam model down to the left-right symmetric model. The next we found, we considered a new complex structure given by left multiplication by a quaternionic imaginary unit. And we found that this broke the left-right symmetric model down to the standard model together with a B minus L symmetry. And then finally, requiring invariance under the complex conjugate reduced us from the standard model plus B minus L to the standard model's unbroken gauge symmetries plus B minus L. So the hope is that in this last step might lend more insight as to why the standard model symmetries break in the way that they do. Okay. So in summary, you know, peering out in from the outside, you know, RCHO looks like an ideal structure for particle physics. I mean, it's 64 real dimensional, which is exactly the right size for one generation of fermions, including a right-handed neutrino. Its left and right multiplication algebras realize the algebra CL10. And so we have automatic access to the spin-10 model and its descendants. However, you might rightfully wonder if RCHO really provides anything extra that can't already be accomplished with the usual CL10 models alone. And we show that indeed it does. In fact, we demonstrated, I believe for the first time, how a cascade of complex structures connect the spin-10 model, the Patti-Salam model, the left-right symmetric model, the standard model, plus B minus L, and the standard model's unbroken gauge symmetries together with the B minus L. So these complex structures, they derive from the octonions, and then the quaternions, and then the complex numbers. And that's it.
Thank you so much for some beautiful algebraic magic. So can I invite questions? There's nothing in the chat. Please unmute yourself and raise a hand first. I see Lisa with a question.
Yes. Hi, Cole. Thank you for a lovely talk. This was really interesting. I was wondering, you were now doing the cascade, starting with the octonions and the quaternions and the complex. Yes. Have you played around? If you're switching that order, do you get different symmetry groups?
That's an excellent question. And yes, you do get different symmetry groups. So that is kind of an interesting feature of this, that it really does seem to require that you start with the octonions and then you go to the quaternions and then the complex numbers.
So the other ones you get are not interesting, or are they maybe different new models that?
That's a good question. So I haven't explored the entire landscape of all possible combinations that you could look at. But so that's an excellent question. That's certainly something I should do, but I haven't. That's a good question. I'm not sure exactly what you would get, but I don't think you would get this nice string of the thing that turned out nice about this was that these were all well-known particle models that people have already spent a lot of time studying. And I'm quite sure that you wouldn't land on those necessarily at every step if you were to switch the order.
Yeah, but then it might motivate new particle models that no one has studied yet.
Yes, no, that's an excellent point.
Thanks.
I see Ardina has raised her hand.
Yeah, so coming from a mathematician who's just edging towards the boundaries of physics, this might be a really simple question. So the way you've set things up, like E7 features in like the way you've written down all of the general generators or elements of this algebra.
Yes.
And so is that like an arbitrary choice and then you're acting by E7? Or is there like a physical reason to choose E7 and epsilon 3 over the other ones?
Yeah, that's a great question. So yeah, and just because it was only a 20-minute talk, I didn't really have time to kind of put in all the details, but excellent question. So it really doesn't matter which one you choose. They're all completely equivalent. So I could have done the exact same thing and swapped out E1 for E7 and it would have worked exactly the same. And the same goes for the quaternions. I could have used the different epsilons and they would have worked the same.
Any further questions or comments? Yes, Anna.
Yes, very interesting. So can you think of expanding this with some kind of supersymmetric symmetries in the game? Because we all know that the standard model as it is not the end story. We certainly don't know if supersymmetry is the answer, but I wondered.
It's a good question. I haven't tried. So I'm not sure. It's a good question, but I really don't know because I it's not an avenue that I've explored.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, food for thought.
Yes.
Questions? What would be the jackpot here for you? Maybe coming from a physics side, you're very much driven, right, by the algebraic viewpoint, and you know it's kind of magic that it comes out the way it does.
it's been a while, so it feels maybe a little bit of magic and a lot of hard work, but it's, you know, and it's certainly not at a, you know, this is certainly by no means at an end point. So there are a lot of things to still be worked out. So in most of these models, there's kind of been some hurdles to overcome. Some of those we've managed to overcome and some of them not. So one of them is getting, one thing that seems to be very difficult in octonionic models is to get a theory that's chiral. So people end up with these left-right symmetric models all the time, but it's really hard to get a chiral model. So that is one roadblock. So and there are ways to get there. In this model, what we wrote down is chiral, but we don't have an explanation as to where that chirality came from. And that is something that I hope to write into a new paper. There are ways to see where chirality comes from. The other major hurdle that is quite difficult to deal with. So it's relatively easy to get the standard model gauge group, but what's difficult is to get the representations right. So the chirality is one aspect of that. And another aspect is getting three generations. That is a lot more difficult than people realize, partly because, you know, when we're dealing with, mathematical models, it's really natural to put the fermions as spinners, in which case they come in powers of two, like their degrees of freedom come in powers of two. But three generations is not a power of two. And so it's a trick to be able to find a mathematical model which will give you three generations exclusively and then not also give you all kinds of extra particles that you don't want. And to get something that's chiral and et cetera. So I think the next big step that I'm working on at the moment, Mia as well, is to try to get a model that fully describes three generations using the full standard model gauge group.
Okay, thank you very much. Very interesting. I think we should wrap up this session, unless there are not the session, but this the talk and the questions here, unless there's any urgent comment I've overlooked. That Kasia, did you want to say? Oh, no, that's just a clapping hand. So let's all collectively clap.